Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Facebook begins a quest for original series. Apple TV launches an Amazon shopping service. And touchscreen television comes alive. How will this trio of development this week, plus others ahead, shape TV technology next year? TechCrunch senior writer Anthony Ha provides some clues when he joins me next. Shooter, the USA Network drama twice postponed, then delayed because of gun incidents involving police officers, is a month into its run. We'll catch up with executive producer John Robin later this hour. Also ahead, the answer to this week's classic trivia question, and some parting thoughts on the lives of Alan Thicke and Craig Sager. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted you're with us on this Arctic Express Friday edition of the program All About Television. 26 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We got the cold coming down. It's supposed to go into the teens tonight, but I understand this weekend we're out of the express, and by Sunday we may be hitting 60 degrees with a lot of rain. Again, happy to have you aboard. Some wonderful guests coming your way in the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It gets better when you are. So raise your voice and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is in business. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Easy Riders in the room along with guest 853. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Anthony Ha is live with us here in the Big Apple. But first, some news note quickies. Vimeo is breaking into television with its online video platform via Apple TV and Samsung smart television sets. The Apple TV app is up and running now, while the Samsung debut will happen in a few weeks. Sci-Fi will kick off season 2 of its popular series, The Expanse, early February. And CBS will devote its final primetime day part of 2016 from Christmas night to New Year's Eve, reintroducing people to its full lineup of new scripted 2016 comedies. That's Andy Tribeca, Wrecked, The Detour, People of Earth, and Search Party. All 5 programs have second seasons in hand. That's news notes for today. Now joining us live here in New York, senior writer of the popular website TechCrunch, back with us for the second time, Anthony Ha. Anthony, happy holiday season to you.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
It's a pleasure. So what do you make of this year of television technology? As we get ready to round up from one year to another, what do you think is the big story when it comes to TV tech?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to narrow it down to just one, but I think one of the things that's certainly been interesting from my perspective is, and I may be getting a little ahead of myself into some of the other news we're going to talk about, is but like how like every tech company seems to be exploring content now. And I mean, certainly I think Amazon was an early leader in that and created a lot of really great television shows. And now you're seeing, you know, there are stories about Apple starting to explore that, Facebook exploring that. And so, you know, that line between being a technology company and a media company and a content company continues to blur.
Well, let's go right into it. Facebook announced on Tuesday that they are going to provide seed money for new series, scripted, unscripted, and sports. What do you make of that? Does it also suggest not only that they want to get an original series, but maybe, just maybe, they may finally have seen the light and say, you know what, we should not just be on the smartphone, we should not just be on the personal computer, we need to be on the television set?
I think that there is an element of that for sure. I mean, I think that you see Facebook, see that being true in other ways. I mean, like the fact that, you know, what Facebook is doing with Oculus, I mean, I think they really want to be on every device and the way that you connect on every device. I suspect, though, that this specific, these investments are probably less about, they're probably thinking less about smart TV and more about the idea of how people are going to be watching more and more video on their phones. And I imagine that the things we're going to see come out of this are going to be things that are really designed for that kind of, you know, very short experience on the phone.
Are you hearing anything from the production community? Have they sounded anything, at least public or private, about what Facebook is up to?
It, you know, everything right now, it seems like they're just, isn't a lot of discussion about it yet. I mean, I think everyone has, you know, obviously thinks about Facebook a lot already because it's such an important distribution platform for them. But I'm hearing, it seems like there's just a lot of uncertainty about exactly how serious Facebook is about this. In the same way that, again, you know, Apple, there's always been all this talk about Apple investing in content, and it is, but it's not incredible, you know, particularly ambitious yet. And I think, like, people are wondering if that's going to be true on the Facebook side as well.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, your website broke what may end up being one of the big stories of this year when it comes to television technology, smart TVs, interactive TV, and that is that Apple TV is launching an Amazon shopping service. If you are an Amazon Prime customer and you use this app, you can order any Amazon.com merchandise, not just books, not just the Amazon Studios original series, but any merchandise sold by Amazon.com, order it, buy it through your television set. And it seems that so far nobody else has picked up on that story. And what makes it more mystifying is not Apple, not Amazon has made a big deal about this. I think this is a huge story and that both Amazon and Apple are not giving it its due. What do you think?
I mean, I think you're right in the sense that it's probably just the beginning. I think that they're probably treating it like a lot of smart TV stuff. I think they're treating it as a bit of an experiment. I don't know that Amazon is going to be investing and promoting this very heavily yet. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, we could potentially see a lot more shopping happening on smart TVs, and this could be just the beginning for sure.
On the flip side of the coin, is there a surprise that Amazon did not introduce this on Amazon Fire TV, given that lately they have been very active in terms of bringing on apps like Twitter, apps like Home Advisor, games and other things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure what the shopping capabilities are on Fire TV. I imagine there must be some, right? Or is it just completely nothing?
Well, that's what the problem about it. One would think that if Amazon wanted to introduce this shopping service where any Amazon merchandise you want, you get via the TV set, either through a set itself or through a plug-in like Amazon Fire TV, one would think that they would have put Fire TV right at the top of the list. You know, rather than go to
right.
Apple TV first, they would have done their own thing.
Right, right. No, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise. But again, I guess maybe if they're seeing it as more of an experiment and as a way of just – I mean, I think that ultimately – if I were to guess, Amazon is thinking about this less as this sort of big initiative and more as part of this bigger strategy, which is we want to have our shopping experience available everywhere, and Apple TVs are part of everywhere essentially.
Mm-hmm. Sitting with Apple TV, a year ago they had over 1,000 apps, and of course Tim Cook was pounding the pavement saying, you know, the future of TV is apps. Here we are a year later, Apple TV has nearly 9,000 apps. A quarter of them are games, which in itself is a story. But they also now have Twitter on the TV set, this Amazon shopping service on the TV set. They've added other situations as well. They've got Little Star, the virtual reality app. They're now doing e-books. They now have a home security app where if you want to put your home security camera and make it available on your TV set, you can, 24/7. What's your sense about how Apple TV is doing? And then more importantly, is the app developer community, those million five developers, are they starting to get the message that, hey, this thing is for real and we should be part of it?
I think it's still not quite there yet. I mean, I think that certainly, you know, all the numbers that Apple's released are good and they suggest that things are going reasonably well, but it's not. You know, I think, like, if we think back to when the iPhone or the iPad launched and then everyone wanted to talk to you about their new apps, and I think, you know, there's certainly interesting Apple TV apps, but I don't think everyone has shifted their attention in the same way. So I think, you know, certainly Apple TV, I don't think it's a failure by any means, but I don't know that it's sort of changed the landscape dramatically yet. I mean, it may simply be that with television that kind of change takes longer, but it does seem like, you know, it hasn't sort of like made everyone sit up and take notice the way that Apple probably was hoping.
And is part of that because Apple's own publicity mechanism works against them by not highlighting what they're doing, not coming out with press releases? It seems that when Papa John, for example, announced a few months ago, we're doing a pizza delivery service through Apple TV, it was Papa John's that did the release, no Apple TV comment in the release. StubHub, about a month later, the same thing. You can now order merchandise, order tickets to entertainment events or sports events through StubHub. And again, they came out with the press release. Nobody from Apple TV was in the release saying, hey, we welcome StubHub to this. You wonder, is the promotion or the publicity not what it ought to be at Apple? And if so, why is Apple downplaying it?
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, I think certainly as journalists who try to get Apple on the phone, we certainly be great to convince them that was the case. I think that there's something to that Apple has this attitude, right, of we are the best, and we are, like, so great that we really don't need to sort of do a lot of the kind of promotional efforts that a lot of other companies need to do. And maybe there's something to this idea that in areas like particularly with television, they're a little bit more of an underdog, and they haven't quite proven themselves yet. And so the kinds of strategies that work with the phone might not work as much with the television. I mean, I do also understand that on some level, I think they want to promote maybe the idea of Apple TV. They want to promote the idea of the ecosystem, but they don't necessarily want to get pulled too deep into promoting individual apps.
Anthony Hobbs, one of the key senior writers at TechCrunch, the popular website covering technology, TV, and otherwise. He's with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Art Express Friday. Yes, we are definitely getting the wind and the cool here, but it's supposed to change over this weekend. But happy to have you with us, spending some Friday afternoon time on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Anthony, give us a ring. Use this number, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04, my name, Easy Writers in the Room, so it's guest 906. And you are certainly welcome to join them. We've got two episodes coming your way on pre-Christmas week. Coming up Monday, we've got the cinematographer for the popular CW series Legends of Tomorrow, Mel Hart Fox Williams. And then we'll discuss where Spanish language television is going in 2017 with somebody who's been on the inside and out, Spanish language TV executive and expert, Court Stroud. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. One more Apple question before we move on, Anthony. Do you expect that they will expand their TV horizons? There's still talk that they may want to, as we know, try to create original content in a big way, or maybe do a streaming service involving various networks. What's the sense out there about where Apple wants to go TV-wise next year?
I mean, I think that both of those things are things that Apple would like to do. It's a question of whether or not that they can sort of do them on their own terms. I mean, I would imagine that sort of that kind of like cable TV streaming package is probably a little bit more interesting for them. It can help them move the needle a little bit more, but it's just a question of getting all the different rights holders involved. And it seems like Apple hasn't had a lot of luck with that so far. So I don't think they've given up on it, but whether or not we'll see that in the new year, I'm not super confident.
Mm-hmm. The third story that broke over the last week was the rollout of TouchJet, and specifically a product called Wave. It's a set-top box or set plug-in or streaming stick with a webcam that allows you to take any Android-powered smartphone or tablet app, put it on a television set, and then either use your remote control, your smartphone or tablet, or your fingers up against the screen to maneuver the app any way you want. A year ago, TouchJet raised about $800,000 through Indiegogo. We had Helen Thomas, the chief executive of the venture, on the air. She will be back with us, by the way, a week from today. More about that later on. And now that TouchJet has gotten the approval of the Federal Communications Commission for their technology, they are now offering their touchscreen television technology through Best Buy's website and through their own website. What sense do you have about what TouchJet is doing, and could it be that they may have nabbed onto what could be one of the big stories technology-wise of next year, the emergence of touchscreen television or touchscreen smart TV devices?
You know, I haven't tried out the TouchJet myself, but, you know, certainly, you know, heard, you know, been reading about them, and I think that it is, I think what maybe more than anything else, what it gets at is this sort of sense of how different people want to experiment with the different ways we interact with our televisions. Touchscreens certainly make sense. I mean, I think with the bigger players like Microsoft and Apple, you're seeing more on the voice side, which to me feels a little bit more intuitive, but also presents its own challenges. So I think what we're going to be seeing over the next few years is less. I don't know that it's going to break out really strongly in one direction, but you're just going to be seeing a lot of people trying to think beyond just, you know, using the old remote, because I think a lot of people, that's just not the best way to do it.
TouchJet is positioning what they're doing as technology that invites more inclusive viewing. With the ability to touch the screen, kids and families can enjoy television together or use apps together where they might not be able to on a smartphone or even on a tablet. There's a sense that perhaps other apps could be developed specifically for TouchJet and Wave, and that you have a whole new dynamic that could take place. What do you think of that philosophy that TouchJet is working with? And also, what do you see as the challenges in terms of having touchscreen television become a major entertainment source?
Well, I think the big challenge, of course, is just, you know, I think just like the setup of the living room, right, is not necessarily one where it totally makes sense to go up and have people touching your TV. And so I think that's going to take a really big change in the mindset. Obviously, smartphones and tablets are already sort of pushing people in that direction, so it won't be as hard as sort of starting from scratch. But I think there is like this really interesting kind of push-pull where, on the one hand, there is this kind of push towards more interactivity in sort of traditional linear TV content. But at the same time, if it's done in the wrong way, it just feels very distracting and people don't actually enjoy it. So I imagine, you know, I can see it working, but I think it's going to take a lot of work to figure out what are the ways that people want to touch their TVs and what are the ways in which it just feels like, you know, a distraction.
Well, welcome guest 935 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. If you have a question or a comment for Anthony, use that room to get your thoughts in or give us a ring, 646-652-2906. It looks like we are going to end the year on a very milestone note, and that milestone being that half the American public, maybe more, now has a smart television set or a smart TV device, Roku, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, NVIDIA Shield, Centab, and others in that ballpark. Do you think that is the case, and is that case being increased by what's happened so far with sales this holiday season of smart TVs and smart devices? We heard that the Black Friday sales went through the roof, and maybe the Cyber Monday sales may have also.
I mean, I think that certainly that it seems like everything that stuff is on the rise. I do think that sometimes I don't know which numbers specifically you're looking at, but a lot of times also when people talk about smart TVs, it's not just, you know, the sort of boxes from Apple or Amazon or Google, but then also just, you know, regular televisions with some internet connectivity. So I think the part of the question there is that there's this very broad spectrum that's incorporated, you know, under that umbrella, which is, you know, probably some people who basically might have a smart TV, but they treat it as if it was just a regular TV, and then they occasionally maybe watch some on-demand content. And then there, you know, on the other end, people who are pure, you know, cord cutters and just have their box and watch their Netflix and their HBO Go and don't bother with broadcast at all.
Mm-hmm. One of the new players in the smart TV world is Leco, the Chinese TV manufacturer. They have an ecosystem not only of devices, but also they are involved with content. And about a month ago, they were here in New York with an exhibit after they also made a big splash in San Francisco, showcasing a smart TV set, smartphones. They also went to a streaming service. They also have a production company that's being headed by Alan Goodman, the former head of Paramount Pictures. And we've also heard that back home in China, they've had some issues in terms of either financing or interest in their products. What's the going thought right now about Leco? Particularly since they're also not only doing TV sets of their own, but they're also still trying to acquire Vizio, which is one of the major smart TV makers.
I think most of the discussion I've heard about it has been more on the skeptical side. I mean, partly because of those financial questions that you alluded to, that it feels a little bit like, you know, there's a lot of talk and there's some uncertainty about whether all of the things that they're talking about are actually going to become a reality. I do, you know, you like, I'll be honest, I don't necessarily know a ton about, like, the Chinese market, and I think a lot of other tech vendors don't either, so I think that, you know, we don't want to, like, sort of dismiss them out of hand. I mean, I think the other thing is they haven't necessarily made a very compelling case about why they have the best offering, and so it feels like, well, we're doing all these different things, but we're not necessarily, they haven't, you know, outlined why, like, we're doing any of them and why we're going to be number one in any of those categories. So right now, I'm not feeling super bullish about them, although, again, I could be completely wrong.
CES, the big technology showcase in Las Vegas, is coming up the first week of 2017. We'll ask Anthony Hopp TechCrunch about that shortly. He's with me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York here on Blog Talk Radio. If a question or comment for Anthony or other guests coming up in the next half hour, give us a ring. The number you use is 646-652-2906. Or get into our chat room, SimonApple04. My name is Easy Rider. Gets 906 and 915 are doing. Coming up a week from today on the program, a nightly edition on the pre-Eve before Christmas Eve day. Coming up first up, we will have from TouchJetWave, its creative and chief executive officer, Helen Thomas. Then, Frank Spotnitz, the former X-Files writer-producer, and then iCastle executive producer. His latest series premieres New Year's Night on CBS. It's called Ransom. It's also airing in Canada, and Frank Spotnitz will be with us live from Paris. And finally, there's a new player in the smart TV, smart device scene. It's called Vuvo, and we'll meet with its chief executive officer, Colin Petrus Norris. It's all coming up on a special nightly edition of our show, 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. CES, I mentioned, Anthony, is coming up in a couple of weeks, first week of 2017 to be specific, in Las Vegas. What is the sort of the TV situation there? What are people looking at in terms of, what are we going to see in terms of new TV tech development?
You know, I think it's going to be a fairly kind of incremental year where you're going to see a lot of the conversations that people were having before. You know, you're just going to see more products, you're going to see more 4K TVs, you know, and I think everything kind of pushed a little further. You're going to see more people trying to experiment with things like curved televisions, which, again, I'm not super convinced is going to take off, but I think, you know, the people are going to be trying a lot of different things out. I think the other big technology is going to be HDR, and you know, I've heard that that's making a huge difference. People who've gotten HDR TVs, like, there's, you know, it just looks great, and so we may start seeing more of those hitting the market. And then I think I don't know for sure that this is going to happen, but I think that what I'm excited to see is maybe more announcements that are less about the devices themselves and more about using this new technology and coming up with new content that actually takes advantage of it.
There's another certain situation that is probably going to be at CES, that's virtual reality and augmented reality with goggles and glasses and so on. First of all, do we know how well these goggles and glasses and Google Cardboard are doing this holiday season? Any word in terms of how sales are going?
I have not seen any sales numbers yet. I mean, it seems like they're. I mean, it's also quite early, so we may start seeing more numbers coming out, you know, end of December, early January. But so far, you haven't heard anything. Which, you know, usually if things are going great, the company will find some way to leak those numbers or crow about it. So I don't know that it's sort of at stratospheric levels yet.
Yeah. Right now, the going thought among people in the VR world is that glasses, headgear, goggles, mobile, a device like Google Cardboard is the way to go. But as I've been suggesting for some time, I think the TV set is also the way to go. And we know it can be done because Little Star is doing it. The Apple TV app I mentioned earlier, they've been doing it now for over a year, although they're also playing the goggle glasses side of the fence. Any sort of CES that we're going to see somebody else try to make virtual reality or augmented reality on the television set happen?
Well, I guess when we talk about virtual reality on the television set, I mean, I guess there's a couple different things. I mean, I think the most common is just people taking what is sort of considered VR content and then just, you know, releasing it as 360-degree content on the television. As I understand it, that's basically what Little Star does, and I think other people are doing that as well. I mean, they've been doing that, I think, a lot on the phone because it's an easy way to get their content into the hands of people who don't have the goggles. But I think, you know, even with – and I don't want to speak for Little Star there, but even with them, I get the sense that, yes, like, they are on TV because – they want their content to be everywhere, and 360 works on televisions, but, you know, that you don't quite get the same experience that you do with goggles, and so I think I think what you're going to see is it's not going to be an either or. I think most people are going to try to figure out ways to bring their experiences to, you know, the devices that we all have, the televisions, the phones, but they're also going to try that. I think the most high quality experiences are going to be still in that sort of goggle experience.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. I do think somebody's going to come up with a TV set solution. And let's not forget the Google Chromecast is now on record saying that they are also developing a VR on the TV set deal with Chromecast. So who knows? We may see that happen at CES. We'll have to wait and see. One final arena I want to get into before we let you go, Anthony, is interactive television. We know that there's a company now called Echo, formerly known as Interlude, which has Samsung and Sony and MGM among its investors, venture capital stuff too, and they're working on a whole set of television series where in various points in each episode, you get the chance using your remote control or smartphone or tablet to pick which way the program goes. We know they're working on a version of Twilight Zone with CBS. They're working on War Games with MGM. Some of their programming is now available on Facebook and I believe also on other social media. Any sense that this year may be the year that either Echo or something, or maybe more people like them, that we may see the beginning of an interactive era where we start to choose which way the show goes from the comfort of home?
You know, I've certainly spoken to them back when they were called Interlude and tried out some of the videos, and I think there are a lot of interesting formats that they've shown up. I mean, one of my favorites, which may be relevant to you as well, was we did a TechCrunch video where it was an interactive interview. So instead of having to watch, you know, all 30 minutes of, say, Anthony Ha talking about the future of television, you could focus on an individual topic that interests you. And I think that kind of stuff seems to me much more promising than a completely, like, game-like narrative, because I think sometimes that can feel like, oh, I wish I was playing a full video game, or I wish I was, you know, watching just a regular TV show, because I think certainly what seems to have become clear over the last few years is that as much as people say that interactivity is the future, people still are really hungry for regular, good storytelling on TV, and so I don't think it's going to sort of displace it anytime soon. I mean, especially the Twilight Zone one, I think part of it is maybe there just haven't been enough people experimenting with it, so if there's Twilight Zone and there's other things that start happening, then might have that sort of breakout hit where somebody really figures out, you know, a way to do something really interesting with it.
Echo showcased what they're doing at the CBS Tomorrow show last week, and I met with some of the people there, and they made it pretty clear that because Samsung is an investor, don't be surprised if when Echo finally decides to roll it out in an interactive TV way, that one of the first places they'll do it on is Samsung Smart TV Set. If you'd like to know what Anthony and his colleagues are up to at TechCrunch, some great stories that they do day after day, check out their website 24/7, www.techcrunch.com. It's www.techcrunch.com. And don't forget, in some cities around the country and around the world, TechCrunch has an annual Disrupt Conference. Here in New York, it'll be in the spring, probably May or June, in San Francisco a few weeks ago. And they also do meetups around the world in all sorts of places. And when you do, check them out. They're really, really great. Anthony, pleasure to have you back on the program. To you and all your TechCrunch gang, have a wonderful holiday season and the best with everything in 2017. No question about it. We will have a lot of tech stories to cover, television included.
Thanks a lot. Try to stay warm, Simon.
Will do. You too, Anthony. Take care. Anthony Ha, senior writer at TechCrunch, joining me live here in New York. More tomorrow to televise after these fine words from the folks at Audible.com. In case you're off the planet, you should know there's a certain movie that is out right now that is tearing up the box office. It's the new Star Wars film, Rogue One. Well, you don't have to go to the film to enjoy it. Why? Because you can have Audible.com bring the excitement of Star Wars Rogue One to you, because there's a brand new audiobook out today, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And you can get it with a 30-day free trial to Audible.com. Audible.com, in case you haven't heard, is from Amazon.com, and it's a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles of every category and size to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, that one free audiobook can be read Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, or any other title you like. And, of course, you have 30 days to check it out, plus great customer service because Audible is an Amazon company. So find out for yourself why digital audio is one marvelous way, a great sound way, to enjoy wonderful entertainment, information, and inspiration. Rogue One or any title you like. AudibleTrial.com/televised. AudibleTrial.com/televised. It's great, great stuff for you and yours. When we come back, the answer to the Peace Packet trivia question, some parting thoughts on the careers of Alan Thicke and Craig Sager, and our special guest this coming up half hour, the executive producer and key writer of Shooter Tuesday nights on USA Network, John Hamlin. He joins you in Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio in the universe, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for motherhood in Hollywood. Join Heather Brooker and her guests for fun talk about what it's like to be a parent in Tinseltown. Motherhood in Hollywood, Mondays, various times, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's the BTR ABD 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Friday afternoon of 2016. Happy holiday season to you and all. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 26 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way shortly, but right now, it's time for the answer to this week's classic trivia question. And unfortunately, we did not get a winner, so nobody gets Britcom FAQ from applause. Our question this week, name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. Name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. The answer, Carol Cleveland. She was part of the troupe his entire television run. Once again, Carol Cleveland was the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. We will have another classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Britcom's FAQ, published by Applause. Wonderful new book about the state of British comedy, past, present, and future, from Applause Books and Cinema. You can also tweet the answer once you get the question. You can tweet to this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. The Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how at hopscotch.com. And if you missed the question on Monday, don't worry, I'll post it tomorrow on Tuesday morning at my own Facebook page and my Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, you got to be into it. So listen Monday, get the question, email the answer, or use Twitter, and you could be in position to win and win big. So good luck to you and all. This summer, USA Network was supposed to premiere two original series. One was Queen of the South, based on Telemundo novella El Rey del Sur with Kate Del Castillo. And the second was the show we're talking about now. It's called Shooter. It's based on the movie that was made 9 years ago, big hit at the box office. And it's a series that was supposed to premiere in July. But it got moved. Why? Because of the Dallas police shootings. And they got moved again. Why? Because of the shooting of police officers in Baton Rouge. And for a while, you wondered if USA Network was going to premiere the show at all in 2016. But they finally did more than a month ago. And now it's running Tuesday at 10 o'clock after WWE SmackDown Live. Joining us live from Los Angeles, co-developer, executive producer, and writer of Shooter, John Hoblin. John, great to have you with us. Happy holidays to you.
Same to you. Thanks. It's actually pronounced Lavin. The H is silent.
Okay, got it, John. John, was there any concern among you and your cast and crew that USA was not going to get the show on this year because of real-life events that happened?
I don't think so. I mean, we want to be very sensitive to the event, obviously, the event of the summer. The show really is more of an action thriller, despite its title. And it's, the show's not focused necessarily on what the events were that occurred in the summer. So I think once we got clear of it, the decision to put it on in November was a smart one. And, you know, I think now that people have a chance to actually consume the show, you see that it's sort of, you know, it is not kind of what its name necessarily promises.
And what's been the feedback in the months it's been on the air? What kind of reaction are you getting from the fans?
Pretty good reaction. I mean, the show is doing really well on USA. We're very excited. I mean, usually it's trending on Twitter the nights that it's on, which makes us very happy. Ryan and Omar, Chantel, Cynthia, Eddie, all the cast stays fairly really engaged. You know, it's an action show that sort of, you know, it has an audience. They seem pretty dedicated and interested, and we're really enthusiastic about their enthusiasm.
John Lavin is the co-developer, executive producer, one of the key writers for Shooter. It is on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time, right after WWE SmackDown Live on the USA Network. And if you have a question or comment for John, give us a call. This number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And that number is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or you can use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we welcome an easy rider, gets 906 and 925 into the room. John, how did Shooter come to be? It was a big movie back in 2007. How long was it in development for as a TV series?
Not long at all, actually. They hired me. We actually sold the show to TNT originally. They had a regime change, and the show was put into sort of a turnaround, if you will. USA bought it. The script was already written. They bought it. We cast Ryan. Shot it a few months later, and it was picked up in January of this year.
Ryan Phillippe, of course, is who we're talking about in the lead role. How does his portrayal of the lead differ from how it was done in the movie?
They're two very different actors. I mean, also the role is slightly different. And Mark's character was really closer to the book. It's based on a book called Point of Impact by Stephen Hunter. Mark's performance is closer to the sort of lone, the ex-soldier living by himself in the hills of Arkansas. Our story has Bob Lee Swagger already married. He has a kid. He's living in Washington, not in Arkansas. So it's a different, it's totally a different character. He's not a lone gunman anymore, if you will. He's more of a family man and a former Marine, sort of putting himself back together after being wounded at war, three years from his wound.
Mm-hmm. Because the show had been picked up originally at TNT, then because you mentioned regime change, that changed, and then, of course, the situation in USA, how did it impact the way the show was produced? Or do you feel in a way that maybe you got more time to sort of hone the show the way you wanted, or that you were able to flesh out the character or the plot lines in different ways?
I would say because TNT and USA are both basic cable networks, there was virtually no difference. USA has been no difference that I can detect. USA has been an amazing partner. There was almost zero pushback on any sort of plot points or whatever we put forward. They've been very supportive of the show in almost every sense. So, they're
John,
good partners.
No, go ahead. John, when you're adapting both a movie and a book, and it sounds like in Shooter, the TV series, it gets, because you have more time and you have more episodes to work with, you can flesh out the characters, you can go back to the source a little more. I'm curious what was top of mind in terms of the adapting process, in terms of coming up with plot lines, in terms of what you encourage your writers to do. Give me more of a sense of the process, if you will, by which the show got produced.
I definitely think you have a better in television. Of course, you have a much better opportunity to dig into the character, to sort of spend more time with them. And I don't just mean Ryan's character. I mean, every other character in the show, you can do a much deeper dive on who these characters are, who they are, where they come from, what their motivations are. We don't have the budget to do sort of, we can't spend 4 or 5 days stunt coordinating a fight scene. So the stunts tend to get reduced a little bit in scope and character gets increased in scope, and that's sort of the trade-off you make. And you know, the audience watching, especially today, they're so sophisticated, there's so many choices, there's so much sophistication with regard to their consumption of television, that you're obligated to tell that story in an intelligent and emotional way, because we can't deliver the action needs just because we have no budget, no time to deliver them. You sort of have to dive in deeper on the other stuff.
Now, in these TV series, Ryan plays the character who gets caught up in an assassination of the president, and he is framed as the prime suspect. That puts him on the run. He is also not only trying to clear his name, but he's also trying to, you know, reunite with his family, and also he's trying to find the shooter. the first who actually did pull off the assassination attempt. From there, I'm wondering how you try to blend the different aspects together, the family drama aspect, the on-the-run aspect, the sort of the motivation of the main, of Ryan's character, the motivation of everybody else. Johnny, you there? Hold on for a second. Let me see. We may have just lost John for a moment. Apologize to you, our audience. Johnny, back on. Okay, for some reason, we lost John. John, if you can hear me, call us back at our number, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on the air here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Once again, Shooter is on Tuesday night at 10 p.m. on the USA Network right after WWE SmackDown Live, which takes place at arenas all over the country. By the way, I want to congratulate the WWE for their special on Wednesday night, the Tribute to the Troops, which they've done now for nearly a decade and a half, where they pay homage to what our men and women fighting all over the world are doing. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, etc. The wonderful work they are doing this holiday season and all year long. John, are you back with us?
I'm back. Sorry about that.
All right, that's okay. I was mentioning, I was giving our audience what the basic plot is all about. From there, how do you blend in the different aspects of the show? Ryan's motivation to catch the shooter, he's trying to clear his name at the same time, reunite with his family, the different situations he gets himself into.
I mean, a lot of it just, you find yourself in the room trying to find the most interesting way to tell the story, then you... You know, in this case, because we put his character in jail, which was very different from the book. We had to make different choices for two reasons. One, we had more time, and two, you don't just want to try to replicate every beat of the movie because people are.
You try to find interesting sort of safes to put him in, and then you try to find you try to be clever on how he gets out.
John Lavin is the co-developer, executive producer, also key writer of Shooter. It is on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock on the USA Network, right after SmackDown Live. He's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Apple Bannon, with you live from New York. Live, you are with us this Friday afternoon here on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for John? Go ahead and make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name, Easy Rider, still with us in the chat room, and guest 923-2. You can find our chat room at our homepage, that's blogtalkradio.com/televised. One thing about Tomorrow Be Televised, the cinematographer for DC's Legends of Tomorrow on the CW, Malin Fox Williams, will join us in the first half hour. And in the second half hour, we'll talk to a popular executive of Spanish language television. He's been all over the map, and he's an expert on the subject. We'll find out from him how is Latino television going to go next year. Court Stroud, former executive at places like Telemundo, Aztec America, Univision, etc. He's with us. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. The next Friday on the program, among our guests, the executive producer of one of the first new series of 2017, Ransom, premiering New Year's Night on CBS. Frank Spotnick, the famous X-Files writer-producer. We had him on last year when he was executive producing one of the most acclaimed shows of last year, The Man in the High Castle, which just started its second season on Amazon Studios. Frank Spotnick, live from Paris, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. John, what's it like working with Ryan and the crew on Shooter?
Ryan is awesome, super professional, dug in hard, trained with Marine snipers. Cast and crew is amazing. We have the luxury of working in Los Angeles, where I think some of the best film crews of the world are. Everyone very excited that they can go home at night at the end of the day, and Ryan, no exception. The entire cast and crew, there's not a single bad one in the bunch.
Mm-hmm. Now, this past Tuesday, you had a very interesting episode, and it's where the SmackDown tie-in really worked because your guest star was Randy Orton, World Wrestling Federation, now World Wrestling Entertainment champion. He's just made a transition from good guy to bad guy with Bray Wyatt and his Wyatt contingent. What was it like working with him on that particular episode?
He was fantastic. I would spin off a whole series with that character. Randy's a big guy. He's a big physical guy, but he's incredibly nice. He also, from years of of doing his day job. He's very physical, but there's a lot of safety to the physical. You know, there was a pretty good fight with him and Ryan, and a decent fight with him and Omar, and it's, you're sort of in good hands with him. He's also just a generally very funny guy, and, you know, even though he's kind of new at it, he was very much a natural at acting, and I think he probably, when he retires from the WWE, he probably has a big future as an actor.
It seems that when you watch these wrestlers in action, they're not only wonderful athletes, whatever you're thinking of pro wrestling is, but they really know how to act, whether it's a John Cena, whether it's Randy Orton, whether it's Bray Wyatt, whether it's American Alpha with Chad Gable, Dan Gable's son, the famous college wrestler and Olympic wrestling star. It just seems that these wrestlers, and of course, we all know The Rock, one of the biggest stars ever, and now he's becoming an entrepreneur in television as well as in the movies. It just seems that they have the knack to act, and if somebody were really to tap them, they could act in probably everything, and The Rock has definitely proven that.
Yeah, I mean, they have a natural – I mean, I don't think you really get successful in the world of wrestling unless you have a natural act of – natural neck to perform, and you know, Randy's no different. He's got a lot of charisma, and he's not afraid of the camera. You know, he doesn't stiff up when the camera's rolling. And I mean, I gave him line changes on the day, and you know, I mean, literally right before we shot in some cases, and he didn't get that kind of traditional new actor thing from him. I do think, and I told him this, I said, I think you probably have a big career in action movies, because he's got great physical presence. You know, he's a good-looking guy to boot, and he's got a sense of humor. It's like a magical combination for those guys.
And as he said a moment ago, maybe a spinoff series might be the tonic for him.
Man, your lips to Von Hammer's ears.
Mm-hmm. Okay, USA and WWE, you might want to make something happen. Maybe it might be a nice treat for 2017. You never know. Great New Year's Eve present, if that could happen. And of course, Randy is now on SmackDown Live, which is on right on before Shooter. That's 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the USA Network. Have you thought about, by the way, using other because of WWE tie-in? Have you thought about using other WWE superstars in maybe upcoming episodes?
I think we probably will use them in season two if we get one. Like I said, I had a great experience with Randy. I mean, if I could figure it out, I would bring Randy back. I have nothing bad to say. I mean, they're a real asset to the show.
Mm-hmm. Another real asset to the show, and you see it from episode to episode, is Omar Epps, a wonderful actor, seen him in all sorts of things, movies and TV. How is this character growing as the show progresses?
Omar is an amazing actor. He definitely, his character, I think, whereas Ryan's character, Bob Lee Swagger, is sort of on the run and has kind of a direct line from A to B. You know, Omar's character is the one that kind of, his arc kind of wiggles top to bottom. You know, he makes quite a few more turns before the end of the season. And I will tell you, there's almost nothing, and it's true for Ryan as well, but there's almost nothing you can't give Omar. He's just one of those actors that can do virtually anything, and there's a lot going on under the hood with him. So just scenes in which he's processing information become interesting. Another huge talent, and I think a huge asset for the show.
We're speaking with John Lavin. He is the co-developer, executive producer, writer on Shooter. It's the popular USA Network series that's on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock right after WWE SmackDown Live. He's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tamavi Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York on that other coast, 26 degrees at the top of the hour. We're in Arctic Express mode, but we understand that we're going to go to snow to rain by tomorrow morning, and then maybe we get to 60 degrees by end of day Sunday. If you have a question or comment for John, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, if you want to catch up on all of our episodes in 2016, and we've had some dandies all year long, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out the podcast version. It's available 24/7 at Apple TV's iTunes podcast app and on iTunes. You can download it to your smartphone or tablet. Take us on the go anytime you like. And you can also check out on YouTube on our BK Live Tomorrow Night Live segments all year long. I want to give a shout out to the folks at BK Live and Brick TV. Thank you for a wonderful year. We've had wonderful people on, a lot of great topics to cover. So check out our BK Live segments. They're available also year-round at www.youtube.com/BrickTV. www.youtube.com/BrickTV. John, how does this experience in television compare to others you've done?
I mean, look, it's, you know, in this case, I have the luxury of that I'm the one running it. So that, by way of comparison, I don't have a lot to compare it to. I have another show that I run for Sci-Fi called Blood Drive. They're both pretty great. We've had such amazing support from Paramount Television and from UCP and cast and crew. I mean, it really couldn't have gone better. We had our hiccups, of course, as every show does, but you know, I'm very proud of the show. I hope that audiences that are watching it are entertained by it. We were very entertained making it. So, you know, and insofar as experiences go, I mean, it's, you know, running a television show is one of, especially when it works, is one of the best experiences for a writer there is.
Blood Drive, by the way, is something that Sci-Fi has been promising for some time. It's like a grindhouse series. When is that coming on Sci-Fi? And then tell us more about that series.
I don't have a date for that, although I'm told it will definitely be in 2017. That show is created by a guy named James Rowland, a very talented writer. It is a show about it's a grindhouse show about an alternate world, a 1999 Flash the Future, about cars that run on human blood and kind of a cannonball run race, a death race across the country. I'm really proud of it as well. It's a very different show. There's almost nothing like it on television. In fact, I might say there is actually nothing like it on television. And it's really, really well done. We shot it in Cape Town, South Africa. We had a great cast. It's gonna be one of those shows that you're gonna definitely be talking about when it reaches the air.
Mm-hmm. So you're now more than halfway through this first season of Shooter. Where is it going to be going the rest of the way? And if you get a second season, what kind of elements do you want to introduce or expand on?
I mean, I'll leave where it's going up to the viewers to watch it because it's a very twisty-turny show and I don't want to ruin any surprises. In season two, you know, we have the luxury that Stephen Hunter, the author of the character, wrote 8 books, so we're probably going to look to another one of his books as another sort of jumping-off point for another season. I mean, he's put Bob Lee Swagger in a lot of really complicated and interesting situations, and we'd be crazy not to use the work he's already done in terms of story and plot to help us move this character forward. And I'm happy to keep doing this show for as long as the audience wants to, and I know that Ryan and Omar and everyone feels the same.
Shooter, now in its first season, on the air for more than a month on the USA Network. You can catch it Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after WWE SmackDown Live, which is on from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. Check your local to where USA Network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.usanetwork.com. That's www.usanetwork.com. Once again, Shooter, Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time. John Lavin, the co-developer, executive producer, and writer on Shooter, thank you again for joining us. A very happy holiday season. Start of the new year to you and your crew. Congratulations on what you've accomplished so far. And also looking forward to Blood Drive, which we'll have up next year on Sci-Fi. When that show premieres, we would love to have you back. It's been a terrific pleasure having you on. And I guess we just lost John. So, John, I hope you got the acknowledgement. And, again, congratulations on the what you've been doing with Shooter. We're looking forward to Blood Drive premiering next year on Sci-Fi. And we hope that when that show is about to premiere, we will have you back on. John Lavin from Shooter joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, this week we lost two very unique personalities in television, one on Tuesday and one yesterday. The one we lost during the week was Alan Thicke, and the one we lost last night was Craig Sager. And both of them shared one thing in common. They both led wonderful lives, and no matter who they reached out and touched, everyone came away with the same impression. These are people that don't seem to have anything evil or upsetting or bad in their DNA. And that's the way it really turned out. And that's probably why both Alan Thicke and Craig Sager had wonderful careers. In the case of Alan Thicke, it was a career that moved from one thing to another. First, it was game show themes from Wheel of Fortune to the Diamond Head Game, and then it was themes for TV primetime series like Different Strokes and Hello, Larry, and The Facts of Life with his then-wife, Gloria Loring. And then there was the talk show he did in Canada for 3 years, which led to Thicke of the Night, the late-night talk show experiment that ran on the Fox stations between Channel 5 here in New York for about a year. I thought it was worthwhile. I liked him. I liked that theme song, which you'll, by the way, hear on YouTube. Very, very catchy, and in a way, somewhat haunting. And then it was Thicke of the Night. While it didn't work in terms of an actual show, it did get Thicke noticed for his best success yet, Growing Pains. It ran for 6-7 years on ABC, and he became sort of the best quintessential father anyone would want since Robert Young playing Jim Anderson on Father's Best in the 50s and early 60s. Thicke played the role to a T. He was just wonderful to be around, and he kept alive in television for the last couple of years, especially with the unscripted series Unusually Thicke, the last 2 seasons of the Pop Network. It's very ironic that Thicke passed away while playing hockey with his son, a very, very family man right to the end. And when it came to athletics, Craig Sager was right there with the athletes with his wonderful interviews and his outlandish suits and Otter garment wear on TNT's NBA coverage. But the suits were really not much in terms of what he really did, because Craig Sager used the suits and his own personality and his inquisitiveness to get the best out of anyone he interviewed, whether it was on the sidelines of the NBA games to the PGA golf tour events to the Olympics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in the last 3 years, Craig Sager proved he was also a fighter of the highest degree by dealing with acute leukemia, by being able to deal with chemo in the morning and then work an NBA game at night. It was wonderful that this year, as he was in the last throes of his life, he was able to, for the first time ever, work an NBA Finals game on ABC. And that's thanks to both TNT and ESPN. Craig Sager was a marvelous human being, and like we said about Alan Thicke, nobody, but nobody came away hating him or had anything bad to say about him. He was also a wonderful anchor in the early days of CNN, anchoring their 11 o'clock program, CNN Sports Tonight, with the wonderful Nick Charles. Craig Sager and Alan Thicke, marvelous people who led wonderful, versatile lives. And it's no surprise that on news of their passing, they both got widespread attention and appreciation from the entertainment world, the sports world, and our world, too. And that's the way it should be. Rest in peace, gentlemen. You are going to heaven of the highest order. I promise you that. And condolences to your families. Monday on Tomorrow We Tell Live, Alan Fox Williams, the head of photography for the CW series DC Legends of Tomorrow, which comes back next month. And then Spanish Language TV executive expert, Court Stroud. And Friday, night edition, with Helen Thomas, the head of TouchJet Wave, Frank Spotnitz, the executive producer of CBS's new drama, Ransom, premiering New Year's Night, and Colin Petrick-Nissen from Zumo. That's all coming up next Friday, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in to hear today's episode, you want to catch up an episode you missed, including all of our shows from 2016 and earlier, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast at iTunes.com. Check out our columns online at MediaVillage.com, all about the world of television, where it's at, where it's going. And remember, you can communicate with me by email, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. We love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Candace Hill is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Hang in there with the call wherever you are. Have a wonderful weekend. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please, if you're going out tonight amid this polar express, be safe and be great more than ever. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.